shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Noah. I'm excited to make you aware of an ebook that we just put together, and it's ready for you to download for free. It's called Getting to Goddess, Getting Your Hormones Right, and it can be downloaded at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com/hormones/. In this ebook, you will discover 1. What's in your personal environment that's playing havoc with your hormones? 2. Improving your sleep by hacking your hormones. 3. Teaching you 5 easy solutions to better hormone balance. 4. Share the top 10 supplements and food for hormone health. And 5. Discuss the big 3. Estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. Hormones and the balancing of hormones are top of mind these days, and this ebook will help you gain control of your health and wellness. This ebook is free and can be downloaded at this link, www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com/hormones/. Enjoy the upcoming podcast. Hello, BYWG tribe. This is Dr. Noah. We wanted to make you aware of our carefully selected book, product, and supplement of the month for July 2019. Yes, the summer is here. Keep in mind, all the links, discount codes, and special offers for the product, book, and supplement will be listed in the show notes in iTunes, posted on social media, in our weekly newsletter, and on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab. Let's start with free bacon for life. And this offer is only good until July 7th. We've been huge fans of ButcherBox for years. In fact, you can listen to me interview the CEO, Mike Salguro, in the podcast archives. Personally, I look forward to my box of grass-fed meats every month. I get the beef, pork, and chicken combo box and regularly take advantage of their specials, like the one being offered now. Until July 7th, as I mentioned, ButcherBox has created a special offer for all our listeners who are new ButcherBox customers. Free bacon for life. The link to take advantage of this awesome offer is below. If you missed this and you're listening to this later, don't worry, we still have another offer. From July 8th to the end of the month, using this code www.butcherbox.com/beyondyourwildestgenes/ for new customers, you are eligible for free shipping, free bacon, and $20 off your first box. We collectively love grass-fed beef, organic chicken, wild-caught fish, and heritage pork, especially in the form of bacon. Our July supplement of the month is BYWG's Turmeric Boost. Turmeric has been in the news for its surprising effectiveness to manage inflammatory issues and arthritic pain. However, not all turmeric supplementation is the same. Turmeric Boost contains BCM95, which is a patented form of whole turmeric that helps to address the absorption issues by providing a trademarked formula with 700 to 900% better absorption in human clinical trials. In addition, it doesn't require black pepper to be absorbed, which can be a sensitivity for many people. We also added MCT oil to BYWG's Nutrition's Turmeric Boost, which is a fat that encourages even better absorption. Once again, and as always, no fillers, no wheat, no gluten, no dairy, just value, quality, and effectiveness. For the entire month of July, if you use this code, and it's case sensitive, capital J-U-L-Y, capital T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, you will receive 10% off this incredible anti-inflammatory aid. You can pick it up at our office or at our website, of course, and delivered anywhere in the United States at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com. Lastly, but not least, our book of the month is Girl, Stop Apologizing, A Shame-Free Approach for Embracing and Achieving Your Goals by Rachel Hollis. The link to purchase this book is below as well. Be awesome and never unawesome, and enjoy the upcoming podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Noah and Dr. Mike, two-thirds of your BYWG team. This is one of my favorite recordings of the month. In this podcast release, we'll take an in-depth look at one of our premium supplements in our BYWG nutrition line, Turmeric Boost. We are so happy with this supplement and its anti-inflammatory properties it holds. We chose it to be the July 2019 supplement of the month. Just so you have it handy while we go through all the specs, the 10% discount code for the month of July is, and it's case sensitive, it's capital J, lowercase ULY, capital T, lowercase URMERIC. You can purchase it online or at our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com, or if you're local, you could pick it up in the office as well. Hello and welcome back to Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. This is Dr. Noah. We have the distinct pleasure to get a sneak peek or an early look at many books just about to hit the market. And often we get to interview those authors for the podcast. Well, this is the case for Beating Endo. What makes this a little different is that this book has two authors. So I'm interviewing them both separately because of their distinct specialties. So essentially, tonight is part one, and 1 week later we'll have part two. And my guest tonight is Dr. Iris Orbuck, one of the authors. And how are you tonight, Dr. Orbuck?
I'm great.
All right, cool. It's strange for me to say that it's part one of part two, so I'm a little off my game, but it's neat. I really like it. I've interviewed two people at the same time, but I kind of like it this way. So, Doc, let me read your bio and we'll get started, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Dr. Orbuck is the director of the Advanced Gynecological Laparoscopic Center in Los Angeles in New York City and co-author of the soon-to-be-released book, I believe tomorrow, is that right?
Yes, tomorrow.
Beating Endo, How to Reclaim Your Life from Endometriosis. Dr. Orbuck is regarded as one of only a handful of endometriosis excision specialists across the country. Dr. Orbuck is an MD who heals each patient from east meets west, mind-body, head-to-toe approach. Dr. Orbuck is the president of the Endometriosis Special Interest Group of AAGL, the largest internationally minimal invasive organization in the world. Dr. Orbuck has published numerous medical journal publications, textbook chapters, and has a running column, Ask Dr. Iris, on cosmopolitan.com, as well as being quoted in Cosmopolitan, Medical Economics, U.S. World and News Reports, Kinkley, CNN.com, Well Plus Good, Insider, Stylecaster, Bustle, Madison Magazine, and more. Jesus, you are like a rock star. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great. The sun was shining all day. It's summertime. It's my happiest time of the year.
I hear you. I see. It's going to be, I think you're somewhere in New York, and I live right outside of New York, and it's going to be in the 90s this week. I couldn't be happier.
Me too.
All right. So let's start with the question we ask just about everybody for the first time on the podcast. How did you get where you are today? Just a little backstory, just flesh out your bio in a little bit more of a real way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a kid, I played tons of sports that required hands-eye coordination, and I loved video games, which is a lot of hand-eye coordination. And then kind of always knew I wanted to be a doctor to help people. And then when I was in my first year of residency in OBGYN, I stepped foot into the operating room, and it was a minimally invasive surgery, which was laparoscopic surgery, and I just fell in love. It was like playing video games. It was using all my hand-eye coordination, but I was able to, patients could get so much better with really minimal healing. And I knew I wanted to specialize in something related to minimally invasive surgery. And then I discovered the field of endometriosis, and it was just the perfect fit for me.
Cool. So, all right. So then let's start right there. How about a little bit of endometriosis 101 for someone who has heard the term, may not know what it is, may think they have it or may have it, but just don't really understand it.
Sure. So before I even define it, I want to talk about the symptoms of it.
Sure.
And endometriosis is a disease process that affects at least 10% of women. So if you can imagine, it's 200 million women worldwide. And the symptoms can include terribly painful periods, painful sex, infertility, heavy bleeding, constipation, bloating, diarrhea, some urological symptoms, back pain. So a whole host of symptoms. However, some women have one symptom, some have more, some have three. And it's essentially the lining of the uterus that a woman thickens each month, it gets thicker and thicker. And then when she gets her period, she sheds that lining. That lining in the inside of the uterus is known as the endometrium. So endometriosis is when you have similar cells to the endometrium, but they're found externally or outside the uterus. So it's outside of the uterus. So what happens is those cells are equally responsive to the estrogens and the progesterones in our body that make the lining of the uterus get thicker and thicker and shed. However, because they're found outside of the uterus, they get thicker and thicker, but there's no exit point for them to leave. Like there is an exit point in the lining of the uterus. So month after month, the lining externally, these cells rather get thicker and thicker. They cause scarring. They cause the anatomy to get distorted, and it can lead to a whole host of symptoms.
So then I guess the logical question for me to ask is why does this happen to some people?
So that's such a good question. So we know there's a genetic component. So if the mom has it or the grandma has it, the aunt has it, whether it's on the paternal side or the maternal side, the mom side or the dad side, then that fetus, that baby, will have a 7 to 10-fold higher likelihood of having endo. And if you think about just the baseline is 10% of the population, 7-fold is a high number, and so is 10-fold. So there's a genetic component, number one. And we also know that when the mom is pregnant with the fetus, if the mom is exposed to different chemical processes like dioxins, dioxins are what are released when bleaching is done, like in a chemical factory or like with lawn products, sometimes different chemicals. When the fetus is exposed to those chemicals, it alters the genetic makeup. And then that unborn baby girl who eventually becomes a fetus and then a kid, then a teenager, then she will have these symptoms from endometriosis. So that's what we know so far. There must be other etiologies, but that's what so far science has discovered. There's so much we don't know, and I'm so happy there's a lot more awareness today than there was even 1 year ago and a lot more than 5 years ago, because it's 200 million women, so a lot of women.
Did you say 200 million?
200 million women worldwide.
Jeez, I was doing some of my own research. I thought I said about 3 million. That's like 70 times what I thought it was.
Yeah, and what's even worse than the number is that women often go on average of 10 years from when they initially are symptomatic. So imagine like the high schooler or the middle schooler is having really bad periods and she goes to the nurse's office with cramps, misses a day of school or two each month until she's diagnosed. So let's say she's like 14 when she has those bad period cramps and she's going to the nurse each month. She's usually not diagnosed till 24 if she's lucky. Can you imagine 10 years on average of seeing 8 doctors? And then when they get the diagnosis, most women have the wrong surgery to treat it. So it's so devastating. Okay. So devastating.
There's a lot to unpack there. And that was kind of one of my questions. The signs and symptoms of endometriosis, to me, seems like they could be about 500,000 different things.
Right.
So are there any signs and symptoms that really should be honed in on if you're a woman that you may think you might have this?
So honestly, all of them. So the most common ones would be just debilitating periods. Okay. So a teenager with really bad periods, it turns out that 70% of those teens will have endometriosis. So that's a really high number. So 7 out of 10 of those teenagers with really bad periods have endo. So that's pretty common symptom that would then correlate with having endo. But just painful periods, heavy periods, pelvic pain, painful sex, those are all like very common. And even just the GI symptoms, most women have GI symptoms long before they can even have pelvic pain. And they usually have bloating and constipation, or bloating, constipation, and diarrhea, or bloating and diarrhea. And they go to the gastroenterologist who does their upper endoscopy, looking in the stomach. They do maybe a colonoscopy, looking in the colon. They do some blood work and they say, there's nothing wrong with you. You have irritable bowel syndrome. But if those GIs just ask those young women, hey, do you have painful periods or do you have painful sex or do you have heavy periods? Then that young woman probably has endo or the etiology of her intestinal symptoms. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. That's wild. Are there other things like IBS that it may be misdiagnosed as? That's pretty common.
Are you asking where it is endo, but they have a misdiagnosis?
Yes, exactly.
Usually IBS is the classic one.
Okay.
That women get, yeah.
Just trying to paint a picture for people that are listening to just get a better hold or understanding of what's going on.
Sometimes women also, because what happens is they're in pain and then they start squeezing their pelvic floor muscles. And my co-author Amy will talk about this as well. They start squeezing if they're constipated, try and push stool out. And then they have sex. And sex hurts, so they further squeeze their muscles. So some women are actually diagnosed with something called vaginismus. It just means their pelvic floor muscles are just squeezed so tight. And they think that's their issue. But in reality, it's the endometriosis causing those symptoms.
All right. So let's assume a woman or a young adult is properly diagnosed, relatively young, like quickly, like the doc did a good job. What are we looking at to maybe do something about it prior to any kind of surgical means? What can we do?
Mm-hmm. So that's my big approach to women. I love to operate, but I don't jump to surgery. So I try and identify what else does this young girl have. And typically, they usually will have tight pelvic floor muscles known as pelvic floor dysfunction. And it's simply because it starts because of the young girl is in pain. So imagine like the fetal position, like a teenager who has bad periods, who's in school, they're sort of hunched over and they're squeezing their abdomen and subconsciously, they're sort of squeezing their entire pelvic floor. They climb into bed, and when they get home, they're squeezing. And that causes pelvic floor muscles to tighten up. So the first thing that I do is I teach them, get them into pelvic floor physical therapy. If they have constipation that goes along with their endo, I always tell them to buy a squatty potty. Have you ever heard of a squatty potty?
I own a couple.
Okay. It's fantastic. It just goes on the base of the toilet and it elevates the legs and the knees kind of above the hips, which puts the anatomy of the pelvic floor in just a better state to defecate, to have a bowel movement. And then teaching young girls or teenagers or adolescents how not to strain on the toilet. Meaning if you're sitting there and you're squeezing and squeezing and squeezing, nothing's coming out. It's a combo of releasing the muscles and retraining how to have a bowel movement. So I do all of that prior to surgery, always.
How about is a person who is extraordinarily stressed and stressful and anxiety ridden have more of a chance to have endometriosis? Is there anything there that's related there with this issue?
So I don't think it's that A, someone has endo, then B, they have a higher likelihood of, or I'm sorry, it's not that A, they have stress, then B, they have a higher likelihood of developing endo. I think what usually happens is the girl or young woman or teenager has endo, she's in pain, whether it's pain or whether it's constipation, she can't have a bowel movement or she's sexually active, it hurts. And then she goes to the doctor and the doctor can't find anything wrong with her because imaging's always normal with endometriosis. So a CT scan's normal, an ultrasound's normal, blood work's normal. So then the doc says, there's nothing wrong with you. So then this girl or young woman is just, no one believes me. Why don't they believe me? I know that there's something wrong with me. They will describe it as like barbed wires in her inside. But it's an invisible disease, so docs don't see it. So then it begets more. They're anxious because they don't trust doctors. No one's finding out what's wrong with them. Their family members are pushing them to school. Their friends don't understand why they're not going to the party. because they just don't feel well. So then there does develop like a worsening anxiety or an anxiety secondary to the length of time it takes to get the diagnosis. And people just don't believe them anymore. Oh, you're not coming out again because your period hurts.
Right.
Which is a terrible thing to say.
We skipped over something, and it's my fault. How do you get a proper diagnosis for endometriosis?
So it's the proper diagnosis is a laparoscopy, which is just it's like keyhole surgery. It's a minimally invasive surgery, day surgery. Same surgery you'd have if you had to have your appendix out,
mm-hmm.
or your gallbladder out. Tiny little incisions, and you see the endo, and then you remove the tissue of endometriosis. I excise it. That's the proper means to remove it. It gets sent to the pathologist, the doc who looks at it under the microscope, and they find certain features, and that's the proper diagnosis. However, based on history and based on a physical exam, I usually can say with certainty, like 80 to 90%, whether I'm going to think that there's endometriosis, because I don't want to take someone to the OR operating room unnecessarily. But that's because I've been honing in my skills from doing a fellowship, I don't even know, like 16 plus years ago, that I have that. I can do that. I couldn't do that in my first year out or my second year out. And my practice was largely devoted to it's fully devoted to endo, and over the years, that's kind of the trajectory of my practice. So a general OBGYN, one who delivers babies and one who, you know, deals with hot flashes and sexually transmitted diseases and a whole host of different issues, they're not going to be likely to pick up the diagnosis of endometriosis like a specialist is. Okay. Because their breadth of knowledge is so wide that their depth really can't be so deep.
Right, right. Now, does diet play in a role of decreasing the likelihood or the development or the maintenance of endometriosis? Like, where does diet fit in?
Yeah, I'm very big on diet, and a low inflammatory diet is so important because endometriosis is an inflammatory state. So if you feed your endometriosis this inflammation, junk food, like bad foods, it's like feeding the endometriosis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I always encourage my patients to eat organic. It makes such a difference because the pesticides that are laden on the vegetables and the fruit to your body, it acts as an estrogen. It's called a pseudoestrogen. It's a fake estrogen, but it sets off an already inflammatory disorder. So I'm very big on eating low inflammatory. In fact, in our book, Beating Endo, we have a whole chapter just on nutrition, how to eat right for endometriosis. It's huge, no matter what kind of inflammatory disorder one has. You know, stay away from processed foods, stay away from sugars and simple carbs. Those are all fuel to an inflammatory disease.
Any supplements that appear to be helpful?
Not necessarily. I think I'm very big into acupuncture to decrease inflammation. And mm-hmm. if the acupuncture thinks there's certain herbs that may help decrease inflammation, it's not going to treat the endo,
right.
but it may decrease some of the inflammation, or it may give a woman a little bit more energy because fatigue's a big symptom of women with endo. So I'm all for that. But as of now, no, there's nothing that melts the endo away. Really, the treatment is excising endo is really the cornerstone of the treatment, plus taking a holistic approach, eating right, lifestyle. You know, I'm big into mindfulness, meditation, and identifying all the other things that is stimulating or causing pain in a woman's body. It's usually byproducts of endo.
So if you identify a woman having endometriosis and then you excise or you remove the endo,
mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, is it only in one spot, or can it be in multiple? You have to do multiple excisions.
Typically multiple excisions. The endo really has been found. It's typically in the abdomen or the pelvis. It's somewhat commonly found in the diaphragm and the lung. It has been found. We once had a patient who had monthly nosebleeds with her period. She had endometriosis tissue in her nose. It has been found in the brain. It's been found in muscle. It has been found just about everywhere. Typically, it's not in a single solitary spot in the pelvis. It's usually in multiple areas, though. But I look everywhere. When I put the laparoscopic camera in a patient's belly button, I look at the domes of the diaphragm, the liver, the gallbladder, the appendix, all of the intestines. And then I flip the camera down into the pelvis and, of course, look at like the uterus, the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, the area behind the uterus. And then I look at the bladder, and then I finish off looking inside the bladder. So I really leave no stone unturned, because it can be anywhere.
And so if you remove this and then they adopt all these things we just talked about, whether it's mindfulness and meditation, maybe some acupuncture, proper diet, keep a exercise, all those kind of things, is there a possibility for it to be maintained to the point where it's a very minimal problem for them?
So I do all of that preceding the surgery.
Okay.
So my motto is one surgery done right.
Okay.
But before I will even operate on a patient, I try and identify what other generators of pain does this woman have. So if their muscles are tight, I want to get them into pelvic floor physical therapy. Most, I would say just about every woman who walks in my office who we suspect has endo, or they have confirmed endo, they all have tight pelvic floor muscles because of the chronicity of time from symptom onset to diagnosis. So first thing as I do is I get them into PT. I start educating about eating right. I start educating them about the environment, like don't eat out of plastic containers. Don't bring that to the workplace. I start educating them about mindfulness, meditation. If they have anxiety, I try and treat the anxiety. If they have depression, I try and treat the depression. And then there's a bunch of other things that women with endo more commonly have. One thing is called painful bladder syndrome. And there's a concordance between women with endometriosis and something called painful bladder syndrome. Of roughly at least half of endo patients have it. And in some studies, 90%+ of endo patients have it. And it is caused by probably the upregulation of the central nervous system. But I put my patients on a low acid and a low potassium way of eating for a while, and we do physical therapy. So I try and identify what else is going on. It's usually like the first domino is the endo that sets forth all these chain reactions of other things. I work backwards and start picking up the back pieces of the dominoes until my patients kind of overall are starting to get better. And then I go in and operate. And that's where we've had a lot of like really great success. And it really just depends on the surgery too, because most docs do the wrong surgery, and that's called burning or ablation. So if they have a really good excision and they're following all the steps in the book, Beating Endo, How to Reclaim Your Life from Endometriosis, my patients do so well.
I love the fact that you're incorporating physical medicine. I'm a chiropractor. I got my hands on people all day. And, you know, I know what changes physiologically that could do. So I'm all in. I love it. I'm excited to interview your co-author on Wednesday for certain. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. I have just a question. It's kind of nebulous. I'm kind of interested how you may answer. But I've interviewed other people on polycystic ovarian disease, PCOS, and now endometriosis. And why is it that, and you might have already answered it, why are these things so commonly misdiagnosed? Why does it seem to happen more in women? What's the big picture here that people are missing?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And it has taken me, I finished my fellowship, I think, 16-ish years ago, so which means I was doing this, my fellowship, I started 18 years ago, and then I did my residency at plus 4 more years. So what is that, 22 years? It took me a long time to understand the question that you're asking. And so there's two components to it. I think one is the insurance companies and big pharma. And I think the pharmaceuticals want to find an answer to disease processes, and they have so much money and influence over everybody. So that's one issue. There's not one medicine that treats endometriosis. There are medicines that are FDA approved, but they are just treating symptoms. They're not stopping the endo growth. They're not melting the endo away. And unfortunately, the medicines have more side effects. If you think you already have these horrible symptoms, many of the medicines have even worse side effects. And then you can only take them for a defined period of time. So big pharma is influencing care, number one. Mm-hmm. And it's not being taught properly in medical school or residency. I didn't learn much of anything about endo in medical school or residency. I learned more in my first week of my fellowship than I did in 4 years of OBGYN training. And I think the problem with our healthcare system, there are so many problems, but the issue is that doctors are expected to not even look at a patient because we're so busy typing on the computer. There's so much to learn by looking at a patient. And the visits are so short because reimbursements keep decreasing for doctors. So doctors need to see more and more patients, and they're not able to take a really good history. So it's coupled with patients wanting a quick fix, the doctors wanting a quick fix, and big pharma offering that quick fix. And it's a perfect storm for, you know, a disease process that doesn't have a blood test or an imaging test to go by the wayside and for people not to figure it out. And that's why I wrote this book, because it really, I don't have endometriosis, but it, or not that I know of, it breaks my heart. Every woman who comes into my office and they tell me this, their lives have been robbed from them and stolen from them. Their marriages have been broken. They've lost jobs. They've lost wages. It's criminal in my mind what the medical community has done when it's, you know, when I give a lot of lectures, I call it endometriosis hidden in plain sight. It is so obvious if you know the symptoms, mm-hmm. and you know the questions to ask. Why can't that be taught in OBGYN residency? Because there's no money in teaching that. Honestly, that's what it is. There's money in a medicine. And I believe in chiropractics. I believe in movement. I believe in the body. And I believe there's so much that we store in our body from that's just not, everyone wants a quick answer.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
To a chronic disease. A very long answer to your question.
No, it's a great answer. It's a better answer than I expected. I have a quick question. The earliest patient that you've seen endometriosis in?
So there was a great study that came out that looked at female fetuses who passed away. So let's say, you know, the mom was in a car accident and the fetus passed away. Mm-hmm. So these authors took a look at all the female fetuses, and they actually found that 9% of the female fetuses had endometriosis. All right, so that number is basically not too dissimilar than the 10% of the population that we quote today. So in my practice, probably the youngest patient I've operated on was probably 13, 14. However, whenever I take the history, whether I'm taking it from a 45-year-old newly suspected or a 15-year-old who's coming to me, and my specialty is really teens and adolescents. That's what I'm really trying to pick up, teens and adolescents, so they don't go into their mid-20s or 30s or 40s suffering for so many years. I always go back and I take a history, and many young girls always complain of stomach aches and stomach problems and allergies. And there's a really similar pattern that I see in patients. And it makes sense with this study. You know, it's genetic. If the mom has it, dad has it in their family, there's a really high likelihood it's going to be transmitted to the fetus.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything from your perspective, because like I made the audience aware, we're going to interview your co-author on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Anything mm-hmm. else that you'd like to touch upon?
Yes, a couple of like myths. I'd like to debunk
sure,
them.
Sure.
Birth control does not treat endometriosis. What happens is a teenager who has really bad period goes to the pediatrician or goes to the gynecologist when she gets to college, and they put her on the pill. You know, she she then is like sexually active, doesn't want to get pregnant, and stays on until she gets married or she's ready to have a child. Let's say in her 30s. This is just a typical scenario. They go off, the girl goes off of the pill and she has infertility. And she had no idea that she had endometriosis. So I just wish a pediatrician would say, hey, wow, you're a teenager with painful periods, 70% likely you have endo. So I can give you a pill, like a birth control pill, that may help your symptoms. So if you have really heavy bleeding, it'll decrease the heavy bleeding. But you really should go get a consultation by an endo specialist to educate yourself. That's something I wish that people knew. I think excision or cutting out endo is the proper treatment. Do not let your general OBGYN do your surgery, because it's going to be the wrong surgery and ablation. Another myth is that hysterectomy cures endometriosis. That's absolutely false. Hysterectomy, by definition, is removing your uterus. So why in the world would removing your uterus help a disease which is found outside of one's uterus?
Right.
And castration, meaning removing the ovaries, is not the cure of endometriosis. I was taught as a resident and in medical school that hysterectomy and castration are the treatment for endo. It sickens me. This is what I was taught. I saw so many women lose their reproductive capacity because their uterus is removed and their ovaries were removed. And they typically end up having more pain because their doc didn't recognize the endo and they didn't remove it. And then they need another surgery. I mean, it's just, it's devastating to see.
Yes. Any other myths? Anything else?
That you could have pain outside your period. Some women have perfectly normal periods and they have pain mid-cycle. That could be endo. It could be pain after your period, before your period. And some women have no symptoms, but they have infertility. Mm. And they can't get pregnant. 40 to 50% of infertility is because of endometriosis. That's a lot of a percentages that's causing infertility. And there is hope. There are answers. There are endo excision specialists. That's why what I do. And find the right doctor. Do not go to a general doctor, a general OBGYN. They're wonderful to deliver babies, right, you know, but not for endometriosis.
How do you find the right doctor?
So, there's a couple of different websites. On Facebook, there's a group called Nancy's Nook. Nancy's a retired nurse who worked with one of the premier endo excision docs who's now long retired, and she runs an online educational resource for endometriosis. It is such a comprehensive resource. So I would encourage patients to join that group. You have to apply to get in because they don't want big pharma in there. That's a great resource. If you buy our book, that's a huge resource. And in the back, there's a compendium that gives a bunch of different websites for all different topics where to seek out good information. And a great documentary for women to watch is endowhat.com, endowhat.com. And they can download a great documentary on endometriosis. It's 1 hour and it's amazingly done.
Oh, those are all really, really great resources. So we're going to round up this interview today. So I have a few last questions. One, I ask every one of my guests that I have on the podcast, what is your routine from waking to sleeping?
That's a great question. So I usually wake up and I try and be present. If I can get on my yoga mat for 5 minutes, it's a success. I try not to plug in right away, but I'm a victim of that, meaning onto my phone. I pet my dog. Lots of times I jump in my pool, even if it's for 15 minutes, and I swim. And then I drink my coffee. Then my kids are waking up, get them going, and I usually will get back on my yoga mat for 5 more minutes to stretch out my back, and then I go to work or go to the operating room. on days where I'm not operating or working in the morning, I'll either spin or I'll swim longer. I do yoga. I work really hard to try and be present and grateful for what I have in my life. And I feel like mindset is so important.
Yeah, totally agree. So any last words for our audience?
There is hope for you. You are not alone. And you can get better. I see it all the time. You just have to be with the right doctor who understands this inflammatory process.
Right. There is hope.
There is hope for sure.
All right. Well, the links to the book will be in the notes on our website. So you'll be able to find the links. That'll be all available. Remember, part two of this topic will be with Dr. Amy Stein, and that'll be right on the heels of this podcast release. And my name is Dr. Noah DeCoy, your co-host, and you're listening to the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. If you like what you've heard today, please share this with your friends and family and encourage them to subscribe on iTunes. Thank you very much, Dr. Orbuck.
Okay, be well. Have a nice one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.